This is Bad Attitudes.
Hello, friends and strangers, and welcome to episode 100 of Bad Attitudes, an uninspiring podcast about disability. I'm your host, Lara. Guys, I'm not alone. This week's supporter shout-out goes out to every single one of you. Whether this is your first time tuning in or you've been here since episode 1, thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for subscribing, for donating. Thank you for emailing me your thoughts. All of it has helped me become a better person and a better podcast host. I wouldn't have made it this far if it weren't for all of you. Here's to 100 more episodes. If you're interested in supporting the podcast, be sure to check out the Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/badattitudespod. You can subscribe to one of 7 membership tiers for special perks like bonus episodes, book reviews, a virtual book club, and the opportunity to guest on an episode. Tiers start at just $2 per month, and your support helps keep the pod running. If subscribing isn't for you, you can also make one-time donations through Ko-fi, and each donation will be shouted out in a future episode. But there is no pressure to subscribe or donate. Sharing and interacting with the podcast is incredibly helpful. The best way to grow the podcast and our community is through word of mouth. So if you like this episode, be sure to share it with your friends. Leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform really helps me out. For questions, comments, or ideas, email badattitudespod@gmail.com or reach out through social media. Follow at badattitudespod on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. As always, I want to remind you that disability is not a monolith. My experience as a disabled person is going to be different from the experiences of other disabled people. I am one voice for the disabled community, but I am not the only voice. All right, so if you've been paying attention, you will know that this is the 100th episode of Bad Attitudes, an uninspiring podcast about disability. Which is pretty surprising to me because I never thought I'd get past like episode 30 at best. So if you've been around since the beginning, I really appreciate you. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate you sharing the podcast. And because it's a special episode, I'm doing something I've never done before. I have a guest. There is another person. I know, it's shocking. So I would like you all to welcome my very good friend, Jonathan Bradshaw. He and I, we have known each other for, I don't know, a millennia, give or take a century. We met in like the 7th grade, and I am just really excited for him to be our first guest. So thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So
I'm excited.
Yeah, it's exciting. And like, hopefully I don't screw it up too bad.
Well, I mean, you chose me as your first guest, so strike one.
Oh. Okay, well then that's out of the way. I don't have to worry about anything else. So the reason I asked John, John and I actually reconnected when I did my TED Talk last year. He was another one of the speakers, and I will link the video of his speech in the episode notes so you can go check that out. It's really cool. It's, what's it called? Between the seat?
The seat to feet investment philosophy. Spend money on things between your seat and your feet.
I didn't relate to the shoe thing, but I totally related to the tires. That got me. So we reconnected, and the reason I asked him is because he asked me a question when we were sitting, just hanging out during one of the rehearsals or something. And do you want to tell us what that question was? Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, so I had asked you, do you consider me disabled?
Right. And that actually got me thinking about a topic I had been wanting to cover, which is the difference between the legal definition of disability and the social definition of disability. And before we get into all that and like whether or not John is disabled, why don't you tell us your story about going from being non-disabled to maybe, possibly, we don't know yet, being disabled, to be determined.
It's a weird limbo. So at age 40, I began to have some, we'll call it some irregular bathroom moments. And I began to feel not whatever air quote normal would be, right? So I was going to the bathroom more frequently. It was more and more uncomfortable. And in normally, I would pull what the stereotypical male would do, and that's to say, "Ah, it's fine. I'm just getting older," and roll with it. But when you know something's not wrong or not right with yourself, you know something's not right. And being raised by an ER nurse, I'm very comfortable going into a doctor's office and saying, "Hey, something's not right." So the day that my medical coverage, I had just started a new job. So the day my medical coverage kicked in, I went to my general physician and told him about my symptoms. He immediately sent me to a gastroenterologist, and I told him he scheduled me for a colonoscopy. And as I woke up out of that colonoscopy, he said, "I'm supposed to wait for a biopsy, but I know what I saw, and you have colorectal cancer." So my cancer, after they, did the biopsy and measured everything and then did CT scans and stuff, I was in the very beginning of stage three rectal cancer. I had some lymph node involvement and things were cutting across. And so after months of chemo and radiation, I then had surgery. So they basically took out everything from my colon to the exit. And so I ended up with a stoma, and so or a colostomy bag. We refer to each other as ostomates, or and that's the kind of the community. So I ended up with this ostomy bag, and of course, like anything, when your life changes like that, and you've got time recovering from a major operation, you go on the internet and do research. And so, I found some really cool communities and some support groups, but one of the hottest debates that I would read is, people saying, "I'm handicapped," and then someone would correct them and go, "No, I'm not. No, you're not. You just poop in a different way." And I noticed there's some division on some lines of like how you got there, right? So like if it ended up like a Matthew Perry, where it was from from painkillers, basically stopping your digestive system, to people like
I
me
just read his
with
book,
cancer.
man. Oh, broke my heart.
I have some strong feelings about some of the things that he said in that book, but we can get to that later.
We'll do that later,
But
Master.
but so there, there's people who kind of are in that camp who feel like it's just a side effect and or a byproduct, and you're not actually handicapped. And then there are people who kind of couple it with another condition like Crohn's or IBS or diverticulitis and things like that, where it that the two things coupled together creates the handicap. So I had been thinking about it for a while, and I don't know that I ever adopted a hard stance on it. And growing up with you, you're the reason that I, when I drive by a handicapped parking space and I look for the placard, and I get angry when I don't see one. When I see a
Don't
ramp
forget to
in
check the license
disrepair,
plate. Check the license
yep,
plate.
it's got to match. I loved it in when I lived in Chicago and they put the person's photo on the tag. I thought that was
Yes,
brilliant.
I want that.
They need to do that
It's
here.
like it's, I mean, it's dangerous in one way, but like so many times I see people, this is so off topic. So many times I see people who don't need to park in those spaces who have taken someone else's tag and are like, oh yeah. I mean, I see it all the time, like when I go out to the amphitheater to go to a concert all the time.
Oh,
And it's
I've
like,
gotten preachy with some relatives
and
about
I'm
it.
like,
And that's because of you and your mom. So
yeah,
we were riding after
my
high school
mom
with
would
you
kick
guys.
your
I know.
ass.
I remember one time your mom parked behind a car at Target, and because they didn't have it and had called the police, and I was like, I'm never doing that, and I don't. So
Good job.
but even thinking about it with like which stalls I use in, you know, in the men's room. And so anyway, that's how I arrived at that question.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So one thing I'm going to say that you didn't get for me, because you keep using the H word, and you know I hate that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I got to get that out of my lexicon.
I mean, it's very, it's so common, and, you know, especially when we were growing up, that was all you heard,
pretty much. It was, but I should use disabled. That's a better moniker.
But, okay. You know, so I'll
do better.
I wrist slapped you for that one. I wrist slapped you for that one. But, yeah, I mean, that was going to be my first question. Do you consider yourself disabled? And I guess it would come down to what you see as being disabled. You know what I mean?
Right. So being an avid listener to the podcast, I understand the difference between like kind of the medical and social definition. You've gone over that before. And I started to research the legal, and I'm like, no, I'm going to let this conversation happen more organically.
Yeah.
In general, I would say that I don't consider myself disabled because I think it's more that environmental aspect of, like, there's not much that I can't do,
right?
Because of it, you know, I play golf, I do you know, things where I bend at the waist, and like, there's just no, there's, you know, other than staying extremely quiet in a meeting, and I inevitably am going to fart out of it, and it's going to make a loud noise, and everybody's going to look at me and be like, oh yeah, we forgot. And the fact that most people can forget about it.
Yeah.
But it does go under that category of kind of the invisible disabilities, mm-hmm. right? Like, there are people who have those like chronic illnesses or chronic pain and things like that. And it's more like chronic inconvenience, really, more than anything else. Yeah. So I would generally lean no. But I will say I never even considered it, even after surgery, until I had to fill out a workplace accommodation form. So when I first had my surgery, I could not sit for more than 2 to 3 minutes. I couldn't sit on my bottom for a month. Ugh. And then I could really only sit for a very short amount of time while I was healing. Right. And so I had to get a workplace accommodation for a standing desk. And so my workplace paid for it and put it in, and so I could come into the office. They also got me one for my house so I could stand and work from home. And then I take supplies with me to empty my bag and to clean up afterwards. And so in the disabled stall at the end of the bathroom, where there is space to actually put stuff, there was no surface for me to put anything down. So right. I carry like a little bag with me. And so I filled out another workplace accommodation form to get a shelf installed, and literally before I even emailed the form over, they were already putting the shelf in. So, like, you know, the accommodations were quick, and they're not, you know, to me, they weren't like, I absolutely have to have them, but they do make my life easier, and, you know, easier for me to take care of my business in there. And, and I've heard one employee refer to it as Jonathan's shelf. And so I was like, oh, that's weird that you even associate that with me while you're sitting on the toilet, but cool. I'm in there with you. So.
Well, I mean, one, the fact that the accommodations were that quick is really good, because that is not normal. Like,
a private German company. They're gonna,
I mean, pretty cool about it. And that was one thing I was going to point out, is that you sort of straddle this line of where your disability is invisible. Like, yeah, I know. And like, if I see the outline of your bag under your shirt, I'm like, oh yeah, that's his ostomy bag. Fine. But you also straddle this line of having a visible piece of evidence to be like, oh, hey, you know, check this out. Which I think a lot of people with like chronic illness, chronic pain, they don't have that. You know, they don't have that evidence to back up what they're saying, which is why a lot of people have a hard time accepting that those illnesses are as bad as they are. Because I know people with like fibromyalgia, and like the pain level is off the charts for them, but like, because you can't see it, a lot of people don't take it that seriously. So I think
I completely agree. Yeah.
You have a sort of a, I don't know, the wording is weird, but you have sort of a bonus in that you have a physical manifestation of what is essentially an invisible situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a battle scar or a, people refer to it as an appliance or something, but it's an aid, right? That helps me function, air quote, normally, but it doesn't disrupt my daily life. Of the physical manifestations, I would say it's probably one of the lighter ones. I try at all costs to avoid what I call comparative misery.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people will tell their story and then go, well, it's not as bad as what you went through. And I'm like, you don't have to qualify your misery for me. Like that's, you know.
Yeah, I think that's really dangerous. There's that whole sort of adage of comparison is the thief of joy, which is sort of the opposite. But, you know, like growing up, I heard a lot like, oh, you could be so much worse off. And I'm like, that doesn't negate what I'm feeling. It just makes me not want to talk about it.
Yeah, it's also probably the thief of empathy as well.
Yeah.
It's like you spend so much time comparing. It's like, just try to relate.
Yeah. I do sometimes sort of jokingly go, oh, well, that sounds horrible. You know, when somebody brings up something that I'm like, that just.
Oh, you're inconvenient walking.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I had to walk up a flight of stairs. What is that like? I have no idea. So, yeah, I mean, no, I get that.
And we all fall guilty to it.
Oh, yeah.
Your point about it being kind of me being a tweener, I think, is exactly what I'm feeling in that moment, even when I asked you, because, if you guys can't tell, I got the face for radio, but this is...
There's no video. This is all audio.
Oh, thank goodness. I am a white male, cisgender, heterosexual male, right? Like, so those are those kind of labels I was born with, right?
Yeah.
And then there's like the labels that you choose. So I'm a proud, I don't know, ally. I'm a liberal. I'm woke. I'm an atheist. There's many things that I choose that I chose to be have chosen to identify with. And this thing's kind of in the middle, right? I have moments when I can completely be under the radar, and there are plenty of people at work or in my social life who have no idea that this thing exists. Mm-hmm. And then there's but I also do some mild activism for people, and I work with a company that makes adaptable clothing, and I do other things to be part of that community. But also, like, I still take my shirt off at the pool, at the neighborhood pool, and everybody sees it. And I don't do anything to hide it. If anything, I like a nice fashionable bag cover to put over it.
You have always been a fashion icon. Someone's
gotta do it.
I mean, really, because it's not gonna be me. So that does bring up a good point. Has anybody approached you, like, about your back, like kids or adults? Have they done anything really annoying?
Kids are the best, because they will straight up ask. And I remember sitting at the pool this past summer, and a guy I was talking to, and his son walked, just literally put his finger right on it and said, "What is that?" And his dad was beyond embarrassed. And I'm like, dude, it's okay. It's a freaking curious child. Like, and he at least had the courage to look me in the eye and ask, I'm good with that. I didn't get mocked for it. I've had people, ask like security guards, when I go to, basketball games or sporting events. And they pat me down, or they just see a bulge under my shirt and assume I'm smuggling in booze, and they're very disappointed when I lift my shirt, or they feel instantly like horrible or mortified that they asked. And I'm like, it's okay. You know, you're doing your job. It's okay. Like, if, you know, airport screeners as well, tend to ask, but adults generally don't. And most of them who hear me audibly make a noise with it, or, see the bulge when starts to get full or something like that, I just straight up just tell them what it is.
Yeah.
So it's just way easier. That's how I've handled things my whole life. But I always say I make the joke about myself first so that you can't make the joke. That self-deprecating kind of humor, that's the way I handle the ostomy bag too.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's a good way to do it. You know, I did Junior's podcast the other day. Be on the lookout for that. I don't know when it's coming out, But, you know, and we were talking about, and I was like, you know, you'll find a lot of disabled people. We actually have kind of a gallows humor, where we make a lot of jokes about sort of the dark side, because the thing is, we've already processed it, you know, like
Yeah, that's a good point.
we've already been through the trauma. We've already, you know, we've dealt with it. Whether we've dealt with it well is up for an argument, but we've dealt with it, so like we can make jokes about it. And people can get real uncomfortable if you start joking about your situation, because they're like, oh, I would never. Well, you don't have to, but I can, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, they're just gonna have to be uncomfortable, I
I mean,
guess, I
yeah,
don't know.
that's kind of where I'm at this point, is you shouldn't have to deal with it. So back to the legal versus social definition. So I pulled it up, and this is according to the Social Security website, which is, the law defines disability as the inability to engage in any substantial gainful activity by reason of any medically determinable physical or mental impairments, which can be expected to result in death, or which has lasted or can be expected to last for a continuous period of not less than 12 months. Which I'm like, damn it. I don't know how I feel about that definition, because
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know what the hell that means. Like it's super ambiguous.
well,
You know,
it's
my
the
condition
government.
is, fair point. A lot of people with ostomies also have them reversed. And
Yeah,
so they're
I was
able
gonna
to,
ask about
especially,
that.
yeah, so some of them can. I remember my doctor saying, yours never will be. And the muscles that control your bowel movements are some of the most complex muscles in the body. And so he was frank. He's like, the literally the last thing that they're going to figure out how to do is replace those.
Yeah.
So not in your lifetime. So it is permanent, but there was part of that definition that said substantially
Yeah,
hindered or substantially.
it's defines disability as the inability to engage in any substantial gainful activity. But then I'm like, well, what's a substantial gainful activity?
That feels almost like they're just defining it by your ability to work, or your
I
ability to
mean,
gainful employment is usually defined as ability
given
to
that
earn
this
money.
is the Social Security website, probably right.
Yeah.
But I think it boils down to the fact that, you know, I have said the legal definition of disability is much broader than the social definition, because
Yeah.
legally, people with chronic illness are protected, people with mental illness are protected. Whether those protections are good enough is a different argument, but you can be protected under the ADA if you suffer with depression, or if you suffer with bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or whatever. And you are protected if you have a chronic illness like fibromyalgia. Even if you have cancer, like, that's protected under the ADA.
Oh, yeah.
But socially, I mean, I think if you did the Family Feud method and surveyed 100 people and asked them what's disability, a whole lot of their answers are going to look a whole lot like me.
Yes. They're gonna have to do with either an apparatus that helps, so crutches or wheelchairs or ramps and prosthetic legs and things like that. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason the universal symbol for disability is a stick figure in a wheelchair. Like, I mean, that's. People have a very narrow definition of what disability is and what it means, which, you know, I think we see a lot, especially when people are surprised by how much I can do or how capable I am. I mean, do you think that's
Which is
true?
borderline insulting. Yeah, I think or not borderline, it's absolutely insulting. Yeah, I do think it's narrow. I think I think one of the luckiest things in the world was gaining empathy through our friendship, right? Like,
Yeah.
so I literally grew up together, so I kind of I had at least some of your perspective, and other people around. to kind of bounce that off of. But I think you just grow up and it's so narrow, especially if it doesn't affect you directly, right? Mm-hmm. Like you only see what you see. And so that's how we take in our, you know, a lot of our knowledge, and we're not going out and reading or finding people out in media. And it definitely, you know, 20, 30 years ago was not represented in television and movies or anything like that. Other than like in a token way.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's super narrow but that feels extremely broad.
Which the legal definition feels extremely broad, or the.
It does. Yeah. I think, you know, you could construe anything as a hindrance, although it still feels like it's subjective to your ability to earn money.
Yeah.
And not any kind of like, I don't really know if there is an appropriate way to measure, because it affects people so differently. Mm-hmm. And in different ways, right? Because I would argue like you wouldn't want to use quality of life as a measure, because I have the highest quality of life I've ever had right now.
Well, and so, it also depends on what other people perceive as quality of life. Because I remember during the height of COVID, I think it was in Texas, there was a man, he was paralyzed. He lived in a facility, but he was married, he had a wife, and the doctors wouldn't put him on a ventilator. Because, oh, well, his quality of life. And I'm like, his wife is literally trying to get you to save this man's life, but you're saying his life isn't worth saving. Like, how do you determine that? You know, it's not like he's 110 years old, you know, and stays in bed all the time. You know, like, how, and even that, I'm like, well, I shouldn't be qualifying it. But, you know, how do you qualify quality of life?
That is an entire profession of medical ethicists who do that. And it's insane. I've met one. So, and that
really?
Seems like a heavy job I want nothing to do with. That'd be a great guest.
That's sure. What I was saying. I'm like, that'd be really good to talk to. But for those of you who don't know, my dog Murphy was recently diagnosed with cancer, and we're at the point of recording. We still haven't met with an oncologist. We don't know exactly what the next steps are, but we talk about quality of life, you know. So, like, if he undergoes chemotherapy or some sort of treatment, you have to determine, okay, at what point is his quality of life affected? And, like,
you can't communicate that to you.
Exactly. Like, I so wish we had trained our dogs with those stupid buttons that you see all over social media. I'm like, I don't know. You know, so like, I mean, if it's so hard to figure out for a dog, you know, who you have to make these decisions for, how do you make it for a human being who has their own perspective and has their own thoughts?
It was amazing getting the diagnosis. And then the first time I met with the surgeon, and it was pretty obvious to me there was like a 10% chance I was going to come out of this without a stoma. That was really hard for me to accept, and it seems so silly to me now that I'm on the back end and understand like what it's like to have it. It really isn't all that bad. It's an inconvenient thing, but it's really not horrible. At first I was like, I'll just die. Like, I'd rather do that than to poop in a bag and smell my own poop all day long, you know, like, because you just go to the worst possible place. And I was like, well, it's not 1884. So, you know, I'm not.
You're not dumping it into the gutter.
A deer stomach and, wrapped around my waist. So, like, I that was the whole journey I had to go on, right? Like, I had to go from, oh, hell no, to like, all right, this will be okay. And, you know, lucky for me, like, he took one look at my kids and was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever said or thought.
Yeah.
And which probably isn't true, but it was bad.
I've known you since you were 12. It's definitely not.
Yeah, it's not. No.
I mean, I do that too, where I'm like, I look at something from the perspective of someone who's been disabled their whole life. And I'm like, seriously, that's what you're worried about? Like, I made that episode about hearing aids and the hair. And I'm like, come on, just like, I, I get it because, like, I mean, I do the same thing. Immediately you go to the worst case scenario. What are people going to think? What are they going to say? How are they going to react? How are they going to treat me? But at the same time, it's like, how do you not weigh those things? You know what I mean? Like, how do you not go, oh, okay, I could hear, or I could continue being, you know, a total bitch because I'm ignoring people because I can't hear them, but hey, at least my hair will look good. You know what I mean? And you know me, I'm vain about really, my hair.
Yeah. I think, well, it's fabulous. So
I mean, it is.
I think that people are more of, I think they're just afraid of the perception of other people and how they're going to take them. And you know, what I tend to find is that people who fear that are usually the same people who discount people with a disability. And so they're basically seeing themselves through the lens that they've put others in. And they're like, oh no. And I think sometimes that's a really harsh reality for some people to,
I agree. I often say that, like, whatever horrible thing you think my life is what you have perceived what your life would be like.
Yeah,
if you were in my situation. So you mentioned your kids. How did they handle the whole thing?
With grace and comedy, I think they,
well, they are your kids.
Oh, that's a fair point. That's where they get all the grace from, at least. Yeah. That was sarcasm. No, I think they were scared at first. You know, I mean, you hear the C word, right? And and so cancer is even though it's almost most types are very survivable now, they still hear that. And they're like, oh, dad's going to die. Like this, you know. You know, their mother came over and we told them together, and then we, you know, kind of talked through the steps. And so, you know, my daughter is an empath. And so she kind of, you know, absorbed a lot of my misery for me. And then my son is just like a kind of a caring, doting type. So like he was just, he was on his best behavior, and he was definitely, you know, just like constantly checking on me, constantly like, you know, just making sure I was okay. And I had literally just started dating someone, and you know, I was like, hey, here's an off ramp. If you know, you didn't sign up for this, so if you want to bail, and she didn't, so she's my wife now. And But they were awesome. They don't really look at me any different. We named my stoma. It is John Stomos, and it often does not have mercy on me. But so we named it, and so I can blame John Stomos for many things. So when John Stomos lets one rip, it's just Uncle Jesse having a bad day, you know.
Speaking as someone who their first celebrity crush was John Stamos.
I do remember that. Yep.
Oh, anyway.
And he still looks fabulous. He's probably 60 something years old, and he is maybe even better looking. It's not fair.
No.
But and you know, it's funny, I'm in my daughter's cell phone as Senior Poop Bag. So that is, you know, it's just become part of our lives. And they think it's really funny when I show up on Instagram, you know, or they show up on Instagram on, you know, medical websites and stuff like that. They think that's really funny. So
that's how they handle it. How do you handle, like, the disability conversation with them? Or do you? Have you? Do you need me to come over and be like, hey, what's up?
I mean, you're welcome to, but I explained to them, it was funny because the one thing I did explain to them was when I did the workplace accommodation forms, and I was like, hey, do you guys know what the American Disabilities Act is? And here's, you know, and here's what I'm doing. And especially when they came and dropped off the, or set up the standing desk, they're like, how did you get this? How'd you get it up here? Cause it's really heavy. And, you know, and so I had to kind of explain where all that stuff came from and like why my work was compelled to do it. Well, you know, I think they would have done it without that, but I think, you know, there's definitely some compulsion there that they do have to make accommodations and spend money. And you know, we talked about being a legal protected class. And, you know, I am someone who is teaching my kids kind of, you know, about things like white privilege and things about kind of that not being an ableist and not trying to. And so I use these teachable moments as much as I possibly can to.
Do they have any
form
disabled
citizens.
Kids? Do they have any disabled kids in their classes? Because I mean, you know, for most of our childhood, I was it.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, you were flying the flag.
Me and Sheree, occasionally, she would show up.
Ooh, you name dropped. You shouldn't do that.
Oh, she's gonna be on the podcast later.
Oh, dope! That's so cool. So I, they have not at all. No, I haven't seen. And it's they have a diverse school from like a socioeconomic and race and perspective, but I have not seen that. It
now,
doesn't
of course,
mean they necessarily
they,
have it.
Yeah, they could be invisible.
I only get to see their class, but it's also, are they in a different grade? Or and then, if there's, I'm sure there's plenty of students on 529s. And I've actually gone through the process of getting myself diagnosed with ADHD over the last less than a year, but and then I'm actually next week starting with my son, because it is now that I'm aware of all the symptoms I showed and all the things I had to do to kind of, you know, coping mechanisms to overcome, that in a classroom that wasn't in classrooms and a life setting that was not accommodating. So I don't want my son to have to go through a lot of that stuff. So, you know, we're working on that now.
Yeah, because ADHD, I mean, it was a thing when we grew up, but it wasn't, like, recognized, you know what I mean? Like,
for me, I always remember in my elementary school, it was the room across the hall from the gifted room. So it felt like a world away, and it was literally the opposite side. Like, you didn't want to go to the left, you wanted to go to the right with the gifted kids, and you couldn't be both. Like, that was kind of my, like, it was a bifurcating hallway.
I had that really weird, situation, because I was in the gifted program, but I also had an IEP. Like, I was, but I was also the weird disabled, I mean, not weird, well, weird, but, you know, good weird.
You're weird on your own. Like, yeah. I have to do it with your disabilities.
No, I was just weird and disabled. But, you know, I had that, what's really interesting, I learned recently, and it shook my foundation, is that initially I did not test gifted. And it shook me. My
really?
Mom was like, yeah, they had to give me a different test or something. And I'm like, what?
Did it shake you because it's part of your identity?
Yes,
like your
absolutely.
Intelligence is part of your identity. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. You know me. I'm always like, I am smart. Don't treat me like I'm not smart. I mean, yeah, it very much like made me go, wait a minute. What? I'm not gifted. Are you kidding? It's like, go ahead.
Like failing a class for the first time. So you know, I did that in high school, and then I failed another one in college, and I was like, I don't fail classes, but it was more of a failure to learn than anything else. And it was going back to school 10 years later for my graduate degree and making straight A's was not like me to do. I was always an AB student because I couldn't quite figure out that last 10%. You know, it was weird as an adult to be mature enough to have the coping mechanisms and also the discipline at that point to help myself. But man, I think I could have been a lot. I know that I lament the fact that I know my grades and my academic performance could have been a lot better. And if I had had the tools to
I mean, you weren't a bad student by any means.
No, I wasn't.
Because we were in all the same classes.
Yeah, and that's why I resisted any notion of it and getting diagnosed. But through my wife, I had a friend who was an adult ADHDer, and she went through the process of getting diagnosed, and she would give me reading material because she was obviously astutely aware that I was also in the same spectrum that she was in. And then one of Oliver's friends his mom is a PhD of child psychology, and you know, we were talking about her son who was diagnosed, and we were talking about Oliver, and then I was like, yeah, it's weird, like people keep saying that I have it, blah 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 blah, and here's it. She's like, oh yeah, you do, oh yeah, absolutely. And I was like, oh shit, like that.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, my mom was diagnosed in her 50s. I mean, like, I don't know if she went through the whole process, because I mean, you know, she worked, I hate this term, but she was a special ed teacher. You know, so she was, I don't know if she went through the whole process. She got put on Ritalin. And so, like, I mean, it made a big difference for her. I think because she saw herself in her students. And she's like, oh, I could have, if I'd had this growing up, I could have done XYZ.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common lament among adult diagnosed ADHD people.
Well, and I think there is a common denominator among, at least in our generation, a lot of adult ADHDers that I know anyway, they were very much overachievers in school. Because, like, I guess, you know, the whole thing of, like, I don't want there to be something wrong with me. Which,
yeah,
every kid
you kind
feels
of
that way.
Figure it out.
Yeah. But, yeah. I'm trying to think if I have any other questions. But seriously, I'll come be like, hey, kids, what's up? I'm your weird aunt you've never met.
Yeah, right?
I did meet Oliver that one time. He was scared of me.
You did?
He was scared of me.
He was really little then.
He
and
was.
I,
it's cool.
You know, it is interesting because we were talking about people using the placards and things, and it's kind of like, a few episodes back, I think you used the term, like, kind of like the benefit. It was the "Am I an asshole?" Or "Am I the asshole?" Episode, and you're like, you know, using some of the benefits or like the perceived advantages, right, of having it, and like I feel like I would be appropriating, misappropriating things if I were to classify myself as disabled. But then I also am like, well, is that because I have a negative connotation of it? And I
well,
don't.
You better not.
I don't know. I can sound like a normal white guy and go, oh, one of my closest friends is he's a wheelchair.
And I'll be like,
user,
I've never met him before in my life. Yeah, I don't know this dude. But yeah, no, it's actually really interesting because you brought that. Because the guy in that story actually had Crohn's disease. And, like, it was like...
Oh,
like,
I was listening intently. Yeah.
They're like, I don't have a bathroom. And I'm like, then don't go. Like, to me, that just seemed, like, sort of obvious. Like, just don't go. Because even as a person without something like Crohn's disease or stoma, if I had to go somewhere for 5 hours and I'm like, there's no bathroom, I don't think so. No. No sane person is going to be like, sure, sign me up.
Well, I actually have, I have the choice about when to go with one.
Yeah.
As long as I am wearing a larger sized bag and not a cap. Yeah. But I could, but I'm as good as my bladder. So,
yeah.
Which,
well, you're also a dude. So like.
I mean, the world is your urinal when you're a guy. The privileges never end when you're a white guy. I can tell you that.
I mean, really,
it's like
you went through cancer and everything, and you still came out of it.
I'm still the man that Taylor Swift sings about. Yeah, It is interesting because, like, there's other damage that cancer doctors are, I swear, they're the only ones that don't take the Hippocratic Oath because they do no harm is not in their thought process. It's just kill, kill, kill the cancer, right? Which that's them helping you live.
Yeah.
So please don't take that offensively if any oncologist happen to be listening to this. But but there's so many side effects that like, I shock people when I say that I don't know that my stoma is in my top three worst side effects of my cancer.
Yeah. I mean, I
don't,
that.
It's the only visible one, but it, you know, like so much damage is done by the radiation treatments and so much from chemotherapy Like I can't feel anything from my wrists down. I have chemo-caused neuropathy. I can't feel anything from kind of like mid-calf down on my feet. So my balance is not fantastic. And, you know, generally you need three things to kind of have that. You got your internal gyro and you've got the bottom of your feet and then you have your
vision. Yeah, I know nothing about that. Nothing.
You got to have two of them. You got to have two of them to stand. So if I close my eyes, I lose my balance, right?
Like yeah.
I no longer can stand in the shower and keep the water out of my eyes. I have to put my elbow on a wall and like, so that way I can feel something. Right.
Well, I think that would be considered disability or disabling. I mean,
yeah,
technically
I'm just like, more able to be clumsy, but yeah, no, it is definitely something, but like those are the things that, so my visible sign is definitely not the worst one. Cause
oh, yeah.
You know, my hips hurt all the time. And,
mine too.
yes, I know. Yeah, I'm not telling you anything, but it's
I'm just commiserating. It's
things, yeah, at this point, it's sharing misery. That's way yep. different than comparative.
Exactly.
But yeah, so like, there's you know, and my entire urinary tract was scarred. So like, there's just there's lots of side effects that people don't see that actually affect my life more negatively than the thing that they do see. So I think that's also kind of a weird thing placed again, that tweener feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I think that goes along with like chronic illness or chronic pain to people. Mm-hmm. You don't see it, but it's super damaging. Sometimes it can really affect, like, I know like one of the shows I do every year where I sell at both of the women who run it have different chronic illnesses. And so like, obviously I follow them on social media and we're like, you know, acquaintances, friends, whatever. So like they talk about it and I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like I get it, man. You know, yeah. Even though I don't have a chronic illness, knock on wood, like it's so intertwined with the whole thing, which is why I always say people with disabilities and chronic illness, because I'm like, it's all so related.
Yeah. And there's no harm from inclusivity, right? There's
nope.
nothing seeing or at least hearing them for what they yeah. are is probably the most important thing there. But yeah, when it comes down to that question, it's just that you've always been kind of a more of a North Star for me in this space, right? Like and so your opinion mattered to me, and that was why I was, you know, drawn to ask. And
yeah.
I think it was our second rehearsal. And I think I thought about it for a while because I was like, also, that's kind of a jerky thing to ask, like to me.
Yeah, but not, like, I mean, if we didn't know each other, yes, that
oh,
would have been
sure.
like, yeah, you're messed up in the head. What? But
yeah.
like, because we have such a history, it's absolutely, I mean, like, I like having those kinds of conversations, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I wasn't afraid to ask you because
yeah.
of your reaction. I just was like, is this, you know.
You should have been like,
generally
okay,
inappropriate.
First, is it okay if I ask you this question? Which, I
I'm
mean.
I'm not going to do that.
You know, you're going to be like, look, I don't care. But, you know, for the others out there listening, maybe, you know, take a beat. Is this an okay question to ask? But, I mean, my verdict is yes, but no. Yes, but no.
Yeah, wow, it's very clear.
I mean,
you
know, like.
I don't need a clear definition, so it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know why. Like, you know, it's. Yes, you have this thing that you have to deal with, and it creates some limitations. But I think overall, your life is basically the same as it was before. Like.
I think both of those things are true at the same time.
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, I think, you know, it's not. It hasn't irrevocably changed your life in a way that affects you day to day negatively.
Yeah, I would agree with that statement.
I mean, but because there are perks, if you've got to take them, you know, like don't take advantage of them, but you know.
Right.
Don't go
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, I think, yeah, but, you know, I think having a shelf put in the restroom
yeah.
was a completely reasonable ask. And, you know, they were like, well, do you want one in every restroom? I was like, no, I can actually control which, you know,
yeah.
where I go. If the one closest to my office, that's plenty fine
yeah.
for me.
Yeah. Although, I mean, if you could have, I mean, it wouldn't have been a bad, like, I'm always thinking, like, for the larger population, like, it wouldn't have been a bad thing.
Right.
I mean, but yeah, you know, no, if you're thinking just for yourself, then yeah, that's totally reasonable to be like, I only need it right here because, I mean, a lot of companies wouldn't have even thought to ask, like, should we put it in everyone? They would just be like, okay, we're only doing this one.
Yeah, this is the one you asked for.
And you're lucky if you got it in the one you wanted.
Yeah, and I recently moved to a different department within my company, and like my new boss, we were talking about something, and she had come into the office after her son had strep. Mm-hmm. And first of all, people don't do that. It's not a cool move ever. But you know, she literally called me crying at like 9 p.m. because she was like, "Oh my God, I didn't think that you had cancer, so like your immune system, and like I could have put you at risk, and blah blah blah." And I was like, "Nah, my immune system's back to normal. I'm, you know, it's totally fine." Yeah. Like, but you know, it took solid 13 hours for her to even consider mm-hmm. like, you know, where I'd been. But like, that's okay for me. Like that didn't bother me. But you know, I was like, I wish you would have considered absolutely everyone in the office or people who go home to someone with a compromised immune system or another child, or, you know, it's like, come on, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm kind of a bad disabled person in that I'm not great about masking up when I go places. And I know that's bad. Like, I know I should, because I mean, I do run the risk. Like, the fact that I had COVID as easily as I did when I had it is kind of miraculous. Because, like, my sister had it. She had it the worst. And she had it, like, twice in 2 months. And she took it the hardest. And then both my parents had it. And they had it kind of not super hard, but, you know, it hit them pretty hard. Me, I was like, okay, now what? Like, that's it. This is what we've been worried about. Which I know.
I got it literally the first week that I could sit down.
Oh, well, at least you could sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it September 2022. So I avoided it for like 2.5 years.
That's a good run.
I mean.
Yeah, my wife still hasn't had it, so she's self-declared immune, but.
Yeah.
She also works from home and doesn't, you know.
You know who else is self-declared immune? Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. No, he's already had it.
Yeah, I don't mean COVID.
Oh, yeah. From criminal prosecution.
Because I was the president. Okay, well, that's getting way off topic. But, yeah, so, I mean, I think this was good. Thank you so much for being here.
Literally my pleasure. This was really fun.
All right. And guys, hey, if you have any questions for John, be sure to hit me up in email or on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok. You know where I am. And I will have all of John's social media. He's going to have a website. All your links.
Working on it.
Yeah, you're going to send me all the links. He's going to send me all the links. I'll have them in the episode notes. And I will post them on social media. And thanks for listening, and I will talk to you in the next one.